How's everybody?
Cool.
That was kind of weak. How's everybody?
Great.
Oh, good. Excellent. Sweet. Cool. Yeah, I'll go ahead and just do the Dog and Pony Show. If you, those of you who don't know me, my name is Roy Heller. I teach Old Testament down at SMU. And this is a class where we're making our way slowly through the Bible. This is our third year, and we've made it up to the fifth book. Fourth chapter of the fifth book. There are 66 books. So we'll see.
Some of them are short.
Some of them are short. That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. I can tell you, once we get to the end, and there's Jude, thank God, there's only one chapter. So that's right. Some of them are short. We won't be hitting any of those for a while, unfortunately. Cool. So let's go ahead and have a word of prayer. We'll read some Deuteronomy, and then we'll go do something important. How does that sound? Good. Lord be with you. Let us pray. Blessed Lord, who has caused all scriptures to be written for our instruction. Teach us so to hear them, to read, mark, learn, and inwardly digest them, so that we may embrace and ever hold fast the blessed hope of everlasting life that you have given to us through our Lord Jesus Christ, to whom with you and the Holy Spirit be all honor and glory, world without end. Amen. Beautiful. We didn't meet last week, but the week before last, when we met, we started the book of Deuteronomy. Finally, Deuteronomy. And if you remember, again, I'm going to give a lot more sort of background-y type of stuff. If you remember, just a couple of things about what we did week before last. Even though I assume your brain's not like a goldfish, but... just some review stuff of what we did week before last. Deuteronomy sort of grew over time. There was a central law code that was very similar to the law code that we find in Exodus 20 through 23 or so. It's sort of a central law code dealing with various types of things. after that law code was sort of established and set, there was an introduction that was put onto it, a little speech by Moses. A long speech by Moses, a long sermon by Moses about the first commandment. It's 10 commandments and then the first commandment. You shall have no other gods before me except me. And then after that, there was what we read last week, we read the very beginning of it, a historical sort of introduction to that. Moses makes a little historical introduction where he talks about basically the stories in... Exodus and Numbers, some of those stories. And then there was a historical conclusion that was put onto the end. And then after that, there were two parts that were sort of inserted, and we're going to read one of these parts. And I figured out the plan for this. We're going to read one of these little parts, I think, in 3 weeks or so. So little parts that were put in after the exile. Most important date in history, 586 B.C. Say 586 B.C.
586 B.C.
Say 586 B.C.
586 B.C.
Say 586 B.C.
586 B.C.
Beautiful, excellent. Most important date in history. I'm brainwashing you, right? Most important date, it's not your birthday, right? 586 B.C. is the most important date in history. What happens in 586 B.C. is Nebuchadnezzar, Babylonian king, comes against the city of Jerusalem, destroys it. Takes the people that survived that off into exile, what's called the exile, into Babylon. This is really, really important. The reason why that's so important is because a lot of the stuff that we read in the Old Testament sort of gets codified. It sort of gets assembled. It gets edited together. It gets put together right there in the exile. In fact, the final edition of Deuteronomy probably gets there because we have two little insertions from the exile that seems to assume that Israel isn't in the land anymore. They've been removed from the land. So that's sort of how the whole thing came out. Central law code, introduction to that law code, historical introduction, historical conclusion, two little things inserted from the exile. That's sort of how the whole book was sort of developed over time. If you remember last time, you can tell from the first half of the first verse of the first chapter that the book of Deuteronomy doesn't, as opposed to the way in which very often people read much of the other parts of the Old Testament and the Bible as a whole, the first half of the first verse of the first chapter gives you a tip-off of the way in which Deuteronomy is going to interpret a lot of these stories that we've read up to this point for the past 4 years. And that is, Deuteronomy is going to set it not about them. It's not going to about thinking about these stories about as them or then or over there. Deuteronomy is going to interpret these stories, so we're going to see another example this morning. Interpret these stories not about them and there and then. In other words, he's not going to interpret the stories specifically as historical documents that happened sometime in the past to a bunch of people not here. These stories are not about them and there and then. These stories are about here and now and us. It's going to see all of those things and make them somehow... No, it's not going to make them relevant for us. It's going to show the relevance for us. In fact, the reason why all of these stories were passed down to us. Why was that? It's not just a historical study of something that happened a long time ago. No, these stories actually affect us. And actually, we find our story in their story. Like all good literature, right? And that's the way in which Deuteronomy is going to be seeing the tradition. And we're going to see another example of it today. Just one more thing, and that is, you remember the story that we had last time about how they were at Sinai, they saw all that stuff, they came in, they did all of this stuff, but of course, none of the people that are there that Moses is talking to were there at Sinai. Well, again, we'll see this again today. None of them were there. All of them died in the wilderness, right? And yet Moses is going to say over and over and over that you were there. You were there at Sinai. And again, we'll see it again today. You were there at Sinai. How many people here were there at Sinai? Well, in fact, according to Deuteronomy, every single one of you. Every single person here was there at Sinai. You know the reason why? Because I suspect about a year ago, we read that story. And we were there. Just like good literature, we were there. At the foot of that mountain, we were looking up that mountain. We saw that cloud and we heard that trumpet and we saw that storm and we saw that fire. And we heard that voice saying, I am the Lord your God who brought you. You, Jim. You, Andy. You, Ann. I'm the Lord your God that brought you out of the house of bondage, out of the land of Egypt. So you don't have any other gods except me. We heard that voice. And as with all good literature, when we read that, when we enter into that story, in a very real sense, we are there as well. And that's the way Deuteronomy is going to be seeing this. It doesn't make it relevant. It shows the relevance. Cool. So what I chose for us today is a little passage near the end of that sort of historical prologue. near the end of that. And it's Deuteronomy 4. Last week we read a part of Deuteronomy. Actually, we read all of Deuteronomy 1. Today we're reading the first part of Deuteronomy 4. And I chose this because it brings out two incredibly, incredibly, incredibly important themes in the book of Deuteronomy. Just wondering, I thought this was an Episcopal church. There's no prayer book around. Oh, well. Anyway, there is. Okay, cool. I was going to get one, but anyway, that's fine. Deuteronomy 4. Let me see if I can remember it. I've got the whole thing memorized. I mean the prayer book, not the Old Testament. You have one? Oh, could I see it?
I'll give that to you.
How does this thing work?
Oh, there it is. Awesome.
Hold on just a second. Awesome. it makes me smile. Deuteronomy 4. Let's take a look at this. So he's going through all this historical introduction, sort of retelling the story in a certain way. Yada yada, about where they've come. They've come out of Egypt. They've come out of Sinai. They've come up there. Blah, 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 blah. So now, Israel, give heed. We can stop right there. It's going to be a long seat. You thought it was only one side of the sheet. You thought, oh, this is going to be a fast class. Yeah, give heed. And you can see I have a little footnote there. The word that's used here is the Hebrew word shama. And see, if I had a board here, I would write shama up here. But I wrote it actually here, shama. So say shama.
Shama.
Say shama.
Shama.
Say shama.
Shama.
Beautiful. Excellent. So the Hebrew word shama is the word that's used here. And the problem with... The problem that we face, it's not a problem with Hebrew and it's not a problem with English. The problem that we face is that the word shama means a lot of things. And yet when you're translating, you can only do one thing at a time. Does that make sense? It's like a diamond, right? But then when you're translating, you can only use one facet. So far, so good. The problem is that when you read this in Hebrew, all those facets are there in the word. Make sense? Cool. Hey, how are you? It's fine.
You are.
No, it's fine. Cool. And you can see that shama, it means a lot.
You've been wandering in the wilderness.
Is that what it is? That's good. Beautiful. And you can see there at the bottom, shama, it means the most, again, when I teach Hebrew and if I have on a vocabulary quiz, shama, what I expect them to write is something like to hear or something like this, because that's the basic meaning of it, to hear. But you can see it means a lot of different things, actually. It means to hear. It means to obey. For me, at least, what it really means is to pay attention to focus on, to concentrate on something. I'll hear into, and we'll come back to that when you see that one's in quotation marks, thoroughly understand and take to heart, right? It's what I'm doing right now. It's kind of what's happening right now. Just pay attention to what's happening right now. And that is, I'm explaining something, I'm trying to teach you something, and what everybody's doing, it's really remarkable, because exactly, I can see all of your eyes, and you're not like on your phones like you normally are. You're not on your phones, you're paying attention, you're focusing on it, you're trying to understand it, you're trying to get a grasp on it. That's shama. Yes. I'm making words, and there's sound bouncing around the room, and that's entering into your ears and affecting your eardrums. And yes. And yes, in a sense, you're hearing me, right? But even more importantly, you're trying to listen. You're trying to pay attention. You're trying to concentrate on. You're trying to focus on. You're trying to. Does that make sense? Cool. The word obedience, and the reason why I have here into. In quotation marks, is that in English, this is even true in English, and that is people think that what obedience is that somebody says jump, and you say how high, right? Obedience is an active response to a command. That's what people think obedience is, right? And so whenever, and again, I can tell you that Deuteronomy is going to be really big, and you can see I have the title of it, the question of obedience. Obedience is going to be a really big theme in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy wants you to obey. God has said these things, and Deuteronomy wants you to obey. It's, however, absolutely imperative that you understand that when Deuteronomy says to obey, that's not just jumping because God says to jump. In English, even, the word obedience, you can look this up, Oxford English Dictionary, look at the etymology. The word obedience in English comes from two Latin roots, ob, which means into, and audio, to hear. So the word obedience in English is not anything about being active. It's not about doing what you're told. The word obedience in English itself means to hear into or listen into, to perceive, to grasp, to heed, my opinion, to concentrate on, to focus on. That's what shama means. And so whenever Moses, in this little speech, says, so now Israel give heed to the statutes and ordinances, right? It's not just hear them. No, but it has to do with focusing on it, paying attention to it, trying to grasp it, hearing, reading, marking,
yes.
Learning, inwardly digesting.
Oh.
That's shama.
You see, mean Cranmer had something like that for the grammar?
Cranmer had almost everything, right? Exactly. In Hebrew, if we were to pray that prayer that I pray at the beginning of every class, we would simply say, Shema. Right? To hear, read, mark, learn, and inwardly digest these things. That's what Shema'ing is. And so when it says to give heed, it's all of that type of stuff with these commandments. It's trying to understand them, trying to get a grasp on them, trying not just say, oh my gosh, we can't eat shrimp, well that's stupid, right? No, it's actually trying to get a grasp on these things. So now, Israel, give heed, pay attention, focus on, notice this. Pay attention, focus, concentrate, notice to the statutes and the ordinances that I'm teaching you to observe, to do. I'm teaching you to observe so that you may live to enter and occupy the land that the Lord your God, the God of your ancestors, is giving you. And there it is again. We're going to speed up in a second. But the beginning of this is so important. You can notice there at the very beginning is that we have one of the basic understandings in Deuteronomy. And I mentioned it last time we met. You remember that? Right? You do good, you get good. You do bad, you get bad. And again, not in some sort of picky little thing. Elaine Culver came up after class last time. She's not here. Elaine Culver came up last time and she says, I wonder how that applies to people down at Parkland. People that are sick, people that are infirm, people about that. And it was like, I should have mentioned this in class, and I'll mention it right now. When Deuteronomy says something like, you do good, you get good, you do bad, you get bad, that does not mean the same thing as, if you get something good, you must have done something good. If you get something bad, you must have done something bad. That's just stupid. You remember, who was it? Disciples, they see a blind man. You remember this? And they say, oh, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And Jesus says, neither. Why did your mind even go there? That's silly. You can't see something bad that happens and be able to work backwards and figure out if there was something bad that was done. No, Deuteronomy is not a stupid book. Deuteronomy realizes that accidents happen. Things happen. People get sick. Blah, 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 blah. Deuteronomy is not interested in doing theology about why bad things happen. Deuteronomy is interested in one thing. Helping you to focus, to concentrate, to pay attention to center your life around God. If you do that, I can guarantee you, if you do that, your life as a whole will be one of grace, of openness, of inclusiveness, of welcoming, of hospitality. Your life as a whole will be better than if you wake up in a new world every morning, you don't know what's up, you don't know what's down, you're just all chaotic. I can guarantee you that if you do that, your life will be better. Does it mean that nothing bad will ever happen? Absolutely not. That's stupid. Only idiots believe that, right? But overall, your life is going to be better. So now, Israel, give heed to the statutes. Pay attention. Focus on the statutes and the ordinances that I'm teaching you to observe so that you may enter and occupy the land that the Lord your God, the God of your ancestors, has given you. Don't add anything to what I command you, and don't take anything away from it. And again, that sounds really picky, but I can tell you, we do this all the time. Because for Deuteronomy, there's only one thing that's important. Focusing, concentrating, centering your life, heeding, noticing, trying with all your might to understand, to grasp, read, mark, learn, inwardly digest the reality of God. And we love to add to that. And you've got a blah, 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 blah. Right? Or we like to take away from that and say, well, that's not really important. What you need to do is to whatever. So, don't add anything. Don't take anything away from it. But rather, what you need to do is keep the commandments of the Lord your God. And you can see there at the bottom, the word here is shamar. Say shamar.
Shamar.
Say shamar.
Shamar.
Say shamar.
Shamar.
Yeah, what it means is shamar is that, and you can see there, it means to keep, hold close, or to treasure. In my bedroom, in our bureau, Amy and my bureau, in the top drawer on my side of the bureau is a drawer. And I don't know if you all might have a drawer like this. This is, at the end of the day, I've got change in my pocket. What happens is that it goes into the drawer. or I find something and I don't know. Where are we going to put this? I don't know. There's not really a place for it. So it goes into the drawer. And so you open the drawer, and I can tell you, Amy found a $50 bill in there the other day. I was like, I didn't know that was in there. Where did that come from? So again, it's the junk drawer, right? It's just a bunch of, it just goes in there, right? In a sense, that junk drawer is stuff that I'm keeping, right? That's not shamari. In our safe, Amy and my safe, we have a folder, and in that folder, there's about 30, 35, 40 letters. The summer before we got married, I spent 8 weeks in Israel doing archaeological work. During all the time that the wedding was getting planned, I was out of the country. But what we promised each other, and we actually fulfilled, was that every day we would write a letter to each other. It would take 30 minutes to an hour every day. And write an error. And again, the blue, I don't know if you remember, long time before email, right? There were the blue type of lightweight papers, right? So we wrote a letter to each other every single day. And we have kept those almost 25 years later. We've kept them, and we keep them in our safe. Notice what I said. We keep them in our safe. That's very different than that drawer. These are things that are precious. They're pieces of paper. They're worthless. Nobody else here would throw them out if you went through our house, right? And yet for us, they're precious. They're something that's a treasure as opposed to the drawer. That's what shamaring is to hold it close, to treasure it, to keep it in your heart. That's what you should do to the commandments of the Lord your God, with which I am charging you. And here we go. This little part, we didn't read this in Numbers, but it's a little story. You have seen for yourselves what the Lord did with regard to the Baal of Peor. How the Lord your God destroyed from among you everyone who followed the Baal of Peor. This was this weird, they started worshiping this weird other god in Numbers. And what do you know? When they start worshiping other gods, bad things happen. While those of you who held fast to the Lord your God are all alive today. There it is. Right? Clear as mud, right? Cool. Look. Just as the Lord my God has charged me, even so now I teach you. I teach you statutes and ordinances for you to observe, to do, in the land that you're about to enter and occupy. And just notice what Moses' role is. And we saw this last time, to explain, to expound. What Moses' role is not just to tell you what to do. He's trying to teach you. He's trying to teach you how to understand these things, what these things are all pointing toward, the bigger significance of these things. He's trying to teach you, not just tell you, but trying to teach you the statutes and the ordinances for you to observe in the land that you're about to enter and occupy. And there it is. You have to observe. You have to, and again, it's not really the word observe, it's a treasure. You have to hold them close. You have to observe them, hold them close, treasure them diligently. Because this is what's going to show your wisdom and discernment to the peoples who, when they shama, when they hear, when they focus on, when they concentrate on all these statutes, they're going to say, wow, this is a great nation. This is a wise, discerning people. These statutes and these ordinances aren't like, I don't know, Hammurabi. They're not like other types of, these are actually, this is actually really cool. These are really wise ways to live. Because what other great nation has a God so near to it as the Lord our God is whenever we call to him? What other great nation has statutes and ordinances as just as this entire law that I am setting before you today? And I can tell you, there isn't any. Because Deuteronomy is going to see these things in a beautifully complex and beautifully deep way. That's in fact relevant for all time. However, you see the but? As I always like to say in class, this is a big but. Never mind. Okay, cool.
Couple of us teenagers.
But. Yeah, exactly right. It probably works better in class. Yeah. But what you need to do is that you need to treasure. You need to watch. And in fact, what you need to watch is not just the commandments. You don't just need to pay attention and treasure the commandments. You need to watch yourself. And whenever you start watching yourself, again, consistently in Hebrew, this is always has a negative connotation. And you know the reason why you need to watch yourself? Deuteronomy is not going to have a very high view of your memory. Deuteronomy is going to see that you basically have a memory like a goldfish. It's like, oh yeah, concentrate on God, concentrate on God. Ooh, is that coffee I smell? Right? It's like, yeah, again, this is what we do as human beings. We forget. And for Deuteronomy, that's the central sin. Just forgetting. Whoops, slipped my mind. Concentrate on God, focus on God, make God the center of your life. Yeah, that's a good thing. Forgetting. But, so, you need to watch yourself. You need to take care. You need to watch yourselves closely. So you don't forget the things that your eyes have seen or let them slip from your mind all the days of your life. You make them known to your children and your children's children. And what is it that you're making known to your children and your children's children? The story. The story of when we were in bondage. Just notice what I'm saying. When we were in bondage in Egypt, and God brought us out from there, brought us to himself at Sinai, and gave us these amazing ways to live that make our lives so much better than they would be otherwise. Make them known to your children and your children's children how you once stood before the Lord your God at Horeb. And just notice, if we're doing this historically, none of these people were there. Everybody that was at Sinai is dead. Their bones are bleached in the desert. These people are the children. None of these people were there. And yet Moses says that you, in fact, you yourself stood before the Lord your God at Horeb. When the Lord said to me, assemble the people for me, and I will let them hear my words so that they may learn to fear me as long as they live on earth and may teach their children to do so. You approached. You did. You approached and you stood at the foot of the mountain while the mountain was blazing up to the very heavens, shrouded in dark clouds. And then the Lord spoke to you. The Lord spoke to you out of the fire, and you heard the sound of the words, but you didn't see any form. Everything you didn't see, you heard the words, but you didn't see anything. I mean, you didn't see God, and that's important. You didn't see God. Deuteronomy is going to make a big deal about this. You approached, mountain was blazing, shrouded in dark clouds. The Lord spoke to you out of the fire. You heard the words, but you didn't see a form. There was only a voice. And he declared to you his covenant, which he charged you to pay attention to. Focus on, notice, try to understand, try to grasp, hear, read, mark, learn, inwardly digest. That is the Ten Commandments. Bum, 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 right? No other gods, no images. Even when you worship God, you can't have an image. Be very, very careful about how you use God's name, right? It's for holy things. It's not for winning arguments. That's the way I always like to think about it. So, no other gods. There's no image of God. Be very careful how you use God's name. Remember to rest. Don't organize your whole life about your whole being. Don't think of yourself as what you do. You're more important than that. Rest. Pay attention to that. Honor father and mother. Respect what's come before. No murder. Do we need to talk about that? I hope not. No murder. No adultery. No stealing. Don't lie in a court of law, because if you do that, the whole justice system falls apart. There can't be any justice. Don't lie in a court of law. And finally, don't obsess about other people's stuff. Don't do that. Right? Those 10, that's what you need to pay attention to, focus on. Try to get a grasp on. That is the 10 Commandments. And he wrote them for you on 2 tablets of stone that you could see at any Texas courthouse. Never mind. That's a little soapbox. But anyway, the Lord charged me at that time to teach you, not just tell you, not just repeat to you, to teach you statutes and ordinances for you to observe, to do in the land that you're about to cross over and to occupy. And then has a little sermon. He's sort of like me. He gets on his little soapbox every once in a while. Because you didn't see a form when the Lord spoke to you at Horeb out of the fire, you better watch yourself. And this is actually really true. You need to watch yourself. You need to watch yourselves closely so that you don't act corruptly by making an idol for yourself. And of course, the idol would be of God. We're not talking about other types of things. Since we need to focus on God, what are we focusing on? Well, what I think we're focusing on is we're making a form. God's a male. God's a female. God's like an animal. Well, God's not like an animal. God actually looks like an animal. Looks like a bird, flies in the air, something that creeps on the ground, a likeness of any fish that's in the water under the earth. When you look up to the heavens and you see the sun, the moon, the stars, all the hosts of heaven, don't be led astray. Yeah, they're a lot bigger than you and it's a lot more mysterious up there, but don't be led astray so that you bow down to them and you serve them. Things that the Lord your God has allotted to everybody. Everybody sees stars. It's not something actually special for you, right? People everywhere under heaven. But the Lord has taken you and brought you out of the iron smelter, out of Egypt, to become a people of his very own possession, just like you are now. And again, the remarkable thing about Deuteronomy is it doesn't matter when you read it. You can read it in, I don't know, 586 BC, right? You could read it in Jesus' time. You can read it in 2017. That now is always true. This thing about not seeing, and again, Deuteronomy is going to make a big deal about this, and I'm going to stop after this, and we can talk if you want to, or we can go get, is that coffee I smell? Deuteronomy is going to make a big deal that there wasn't a form. When they looked up that mount, they didn't see anybody talking to them. They just heard the words, and so therefore the words are important. It's really, really important. You don't make an image of God. And we always think of this as, oh, then you can't. And again, probably at the time, it probably had this significance. But I think Deuteronomy takes it further. You can't make an idol, right? You can't make an image that you put in a temple or something, and you go in there and you offer food or something and bow down to it. Yeah, that's silly. No, you can't do that. But on the other hand, we do this so often ourselves. The image that we have of God. I think we all do it at some time or other, and that is we get in our heads. Oh, I know what God is like. I know who God is. I know God is. God is right. Whenever you pray, what is it that you see that you're praying to? Well, I can tell you, a lot of people see themselves praying. Oh no, someone who looks a lot like you, right? So, an older man sitting in a chair, right? Maybe with a big beard, sort of Santa Claus figure, right? So they pray to Santa Claus. A big beard, right? Someone a little bit mean, but can be really nice. Sees you when you're naughty, sees you when you're nice type of idea, right? Prays to Santa Claus. That's kind of how we often see God. And we get that image in our head, and that's all that we can see. Or we see God like a policeman, right? He's the one to make sure that good people get good things and bad people get bad things. And that's how we see God, and we get it in our head. Or we see God. This is a big one. Here we go. Mostly, I think, because we pray this every Sunday. We see God like a father, right? Someone who loves us, cares for us, sometimes wants to discipline us. But we see God like a father, and that's the image that we get in our head, and we just can't let it go. We get images in our head about what God is like, and I can tell you that I don't care if you make it out of gold, I don't care if you make it out of silver, or you make it out of synapses. Is that having an AA image of God that you can't get out of, that whenever you think about God, that's the only thing you think about. That is as dangerous, and that is as, now I'm getting into meddling, I know, that is as idolatrous as bowing down to a golden statue. Because I can tell you, when we stood at that foot of that mountain and we looked up there, we did not see a form, and you know the reason why, because God doesn't have one. God, you remember, when was that, a year ago? We were there at the burning bush, and Moses says, ooh, if I come to them and I say, ooh, you know, what's his, and they ask me, what's his name? Right? Ooh, gosh, why do I tell them? You remember what God said? Name, shmame. I can be anything I want to be. I can be anything I could be. I can be anything I can be. I can be anything that is needed at the time. I am. And just notice there's not a little blank after that that's filled in. I am a father. Right? I am. Notice he doesn't even say, I am a God. You know what a God is. God is something you come and you worship and blah, blah, blah. No, it's not even God. God itself is a metaphor. This is bigger than anything. And that mystery, that mysterious presence before whom we must all deal, that, according to Deuteronomy, that is what we need to pay attention to and build our lives around. That's what we need to focus on. And if we can do that, and in December we're going to read very clearly that, in fact, it's not that hard. It really isn't. If we can do that, then things will go better for us than if we don't. And that's kind of the message of Deuteronomy. Ooh, my goodness. We ended early today. Shay's sermon was short, and Roy's lesson is short. Anybody have any questions, concerns? Yeah.
The story of the Transfiguration. The disciples are on the mountain.
I don't know that story.
And I know. And in Luke's account, all the accounts are all pretty much alike. But he throws in an interesting thing that I thought of.
Yes.
Because the cloud envelops them, and then they see no one but Jesus.
That's right.
Only.
That's right.
And the voice says, "This is my beloved son.
Listen to him." That's right. Pay attention to him. Focus on him.
Had Luke read Deuteronomy?
Probably, yeah. He had probably, in fact, probably not only read it, he probably focused, concentrated on, yeah, new. Yeah,
no, I mean, but it's just a wonderful parallel.
Absolutely.
And the gospel writers all do that.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely, yeah. And again, right, it seems to me, right, and again, this is everywhere. Once you sort of get a grasp on Deuteronomy, it's everywhere in the New Testament. There's not almost a single story in the New Testament of Jesus that's not Deuteronomic. The lawyer comes to Jesus. Remember this? And says, "What's the greatest commandment?" Right? What's the one thing that we need to build our lives around? What is the one thing? And what I'm expecting, right? If Jesus were a normal, I don't know, Pharisee, what he would say is Sabbath. Right? And again, Sabbath is a great thing to build your life around. It really, really is. We always like to throw it off because it's not Jesus' answer. But when you think about it, I mean, Sabbath is a great thing because Sabbath, that time and that place, the place where we sort of honor God in our actual lives, and they intersect right there, and it's a way in which you can actually practice the presence of God. Actually, Sabbath is it's a really good thing. I wouldn't have said that. But it is. I mean, you can sort of understand where the Pharisees have come from. But you notice Jesus doesn't say that. What's the greatest commandment? He quotes Deuteronomy. Love the Lord your God. Love the Lord your God. And again, we'll read this next time in Deuteronomy 6. Love the Lord your God with everything you think, with everything you feel, and with everything you do. In other words, focus, concentrate, heed, center up on, listen into, right? Treasure. Hold that central. Because if you do that, everything else takes care of itself. You don't need to worry about oxen and ditches, and you don't need to worry about shrimp, and you don't need to worry about all these. How much do we tithe? Although tithing is important, you know how much we tithe. Stewardship, man. But yeah, you do that, everything else takes care of itself. And that's always the way in which Jesus always argues everything. Almost all of his parables are centered in Deuteronomy. The way in which Paul argues is Deuteronomy. Keep that central. And everything else flows. Don't get focused on other types of things. So, yeah, something else. Anybody else? Oh, the reason why I noticed it this morning. I noticed it this morning when we were standing there and we were going through the liturgy and the confession. Most merciful God, we confess that we have sinned against you by not pulling oxen out of ditches when you say so, and by eating shrimp and bacon. No, we just notice the way in which it argues the confession that we say, right? We confess that we have sinned against you in thought and word and deed. How are we supposed to love God? everything that we think, everything that we feel, everything that we do, in thought, word, and deed, by what we have done and by what we have left undone. We have not loved you with our whole heart. There it is, inwardly digesting, focusing. We've not loved our neighbors as ourselves. That's obviously Leviticus 19, right? We're truly sorry. We humbly repent. For the sake of your Son, Jesus Christ, have mercy on us and forgive us so that we may
delight
in your will. Focusing, right? Things will go better for you if you, that we may delight in your will and also walk in your ways. There it is, right there, teaching you to observe, teaching you to do, right? There it is. To the glory of your name, because ultimately, of course, for Deuteronomy and for us. That's what's most important. Amen. Beautiful. Splendid. So, and again, it's not just there. Actually, you read the whole Eucharistic prayer. It's every. You just start seeing it. It's everywhere.
It's like sort of looking into your family history.
Yes.
As a child, and you hear all these stories from your grandparents, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, yes.
And it's as if they really did happen to you.
Yes, absolutely.
You were there, and you can often wonder, well, was I really there?
That's right, exactly.
But it felt like I was there.
Absolutely. And the other image that I get is family history, but the other image that I get, those of you who read literature, is that when I read again every year in December, and I'll do it again this December, November, December, around Christmas time, I always read Dickens' Christmas Carol. It's, again, I think that if the canon were ever opened, it's 1st and 2nd, 3rd John, Jude, Revelation, Christmas Carol. That's where it should be, right there at the end. It's a really, if you have never actually read the original Christmas Carol, it's an amazing, amazing, amazing story. It's better than Jude, actually, but anyway. But there, when I'm there in the first stave, right, and there's Scrooge, right, and he's walking up the stairs, and he twists the key, and the knocker's there, and it changes into Marley's face, and it's like he's frightened, and then he looks up again, and it's not there, and he goes through, and he opens the door, and he goes through, and he looks on the other side to make sure that Marley's not standing there with his face through the, and there's nothing there. When it's there, you can even tell when I'm retelling the story, I'm not here, I'm there. But in fact, I'm not there, I'm here, because the story is here. I'm actually entering into that story, and it's because of that. And this is the way literature works all the time, because I enter into it. Flannery O'Connor, Shay mentioned this morning, when I read A Good Man is Hard to Find, and I see the grandmother there with the cat, and the cat jumps out and jumps on her son Bailey's neck and scratches him and all that stuff. When I'm reading it, I'm there. And that's how that story affects me. It's not like I read the story and I analyze it and blah, 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 blah. And it remains out there and I sort of look at it like a, I don't know, a chart or something. No, that's not the way literature works. Literature works by entering into it and surrounding it, surrounding us, so that we're actually in the story itself. We were there. All right, I'm tired. anybody else? Cool, awesome. Thank you so much. I'll see you next week. Deuteronomy 6 next time.